Welcome to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. Every Wednesday, Mark and Kim, along with their special guests, will explore thought-provoking topics and ideas that promote creativity, self-help, healing, happiness, and well-being to inspire you on your spiritual journey. Each week, Mark and Kim will discuss different paths to achieving a more spiritual, balanced, happy, and healthy lifestyle. Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual. Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. Mark and Kim are tested, certified, and professional spiritual mediums, metaphysical teachers, healers, and spiritual advisors with their own individual spiritual practices in Seattle, Washington, and Los Angeles, California. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Good afternoon, Inspired listeners, and welcome to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim today. It is so nice to be back. I feel like I've been back, haven't been on for a couple of weeks, and especially on with Mark, so I'm excited to do a show together. Today, yes. Today we do have a really important show ahead of us today. There's a lot of people out there I know that will be able to benefit from the topic of what we're going to be discussing as we bring on our guest in just a moment. But the topic being the blessing of sorrow and how to turn grief into healing, something that's very important for us to talk about. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, I do want to say thank you for being here. I am happy to be back on the air, broadcasting from the state of Virginia, back in Virginia. If you'd like to learn more about the work that I do, you can find me at lovefirst.info. And if you'd like to call us live today, you can certainly do that today and every week. You can reach us at 202-570-7057. If you're going through a difficult time from the loss of a loved one and you'd like to talk through how to best work through grief and understand it, today is the day to do that. But I'd like to now bring on my co-host, and it's Mark. It's good to be back here.
Hi, Kim. Hi, Inspired listeners. It's good to have you back on here. Yeah, it's been a couple weeks. You were kind of doing the bi-coastal traveling to California and back to Virginia. So we are back at it, as we like to say, every Wisdom Wednesday. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out here in Virginia, not too humid. And I'm really taking it all in.
Very nice. Well, we're doing just the opposite. We're breaking records here in Seattle. It's very, very hot. No humidity, though, so I can live with that, and I appreciate the nice weather.
Very good.
But I just want to say it's good to have you back on the air, and I'm really looking forward to this show, this interview myself, because, you know, a lot of the work that I do today is because of the grieving process that I went through with a lot of tragedies, and I think this is going to be a fantastic show, How to Turn Grief into Healing, something I think we all could work on. And like Kim said, if you want to call in, we're going to be taking calls later in the show. The Ohm Times Radio call-in line is 202-570-7057. Love to have a chat with you. If you have a question in regards to the topic of grieving, healing, sorrow, that's what we're going to be talking about today. But again, just want to thank you for hanging out with us. My name is Mark Lanehart. I am the Intuitive Prospector here in Seattle, Washington, the beautiful Pacific Northwest. If you want to learn more about the work that I'm doing, please visit marklanehart.com. You can also internet search The Intuitive Prospector. You can also catch me on Forest Fridays for the hikes that we're doing here in the Pacific Northwest, and you can catch me every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Metaphysical Mocha Monday, where I have a 30-minute show of inspiration, guidance, spiritualism, metaphysics, and afterwards the prospecting Q&A after show, where I have a direct conversation with you for spiritual chat, readings. We have a lot of fun every Monday morning. If you want to catch any of the events that I'm doing, please visit marklanehart.com. I have a whole bunch of hikes and events coming up. Would love to help you do some spiritual prospecting for your own spiritual gold. If you want to connect with us via social media, a couple of places that you can do that. You can go to Facebook right now, type in Inspired Living Radio, ask to join our growing global audience all around the world of inspired listeners who we love and appreciate that tune in every week with us. You can also visit us on Twitter and Instagram under the handle Inspired For Us. That is the number 4 in there, so Inspired For Us for Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Google Plus Communities under Inspired Living with Mark and Kim. But if you don't want to come live on the air with us, you can always post a question on our social media sites, preferably Facebook. That's our main page, Inspired Living Radio, and we'll bring your question live to air. If you missed the live show, which is streaming live right now through any device all around the world, you don't need a username, you don't need a password. We have a lot of fun here on Inspired Living Radio. You can catch our encore shows that will run throughout the rest of this week. You can also find us on YouTube, MarkLeanHart.com, SoundCloud, LoveFirst.info, Podbean, or iTunes. We have over 150 some shows now, 3 seasons of Inspired Living Radio, so a lot of different topics that you can listen into. And I just want to give you our positive affirmation for the month. Every month we try to give you a positive affirmation to get you through the week, to get you through the month, and July is no different. And the Inspired Living Radio positive affirmation for the month of July is: every hurdle I jump over only strengthens my self-confidence and determination. And this month's Inspired Living Radio positive affirmation is sponsored by the affiliate, A Hemp Awareness, of Prime My Body, From Soil to Oil, and one of the best absorption-rated nano-enhanced hemp oils on the market, an all-natural, plant-based supplement with no psychoactive highs and legal in all 50 states. From liquid hemp oil, hemp-infused skin moisturizer, hemp protein superfood, or a simple liver detoxification system, start achieving your health and wellness goals naturally from the leaves and rootstock of this amazing, healing, and ancient plant, hemp. Your health is your wealth. I have to say I've been on the oil for several months now, the CBD oil in liquid form and the protein, and I'll tell you guys, I feel amazing. I feel great. So if you're dealing with chronic pain, anxiety, depression, PTSD, everything that's going to align with the topic that we're talking about today, please visit awareness.primemybody.com for these amazing supplements. And with that, Kim, I'm going to turn it back over to you because I know we want to get into the topic today with our very special guest, and I just want to let our guest and our inspired listeners all around the world know that you are the inspired and the inspiration. Back to you, Kim.
And today we have a very special guest. He's going to be sharing his knowledge and wisdom on the topic of sorrow and how to turn grief into healing. So Rabbi Ben Kamen holds a Doctor of Divinity degree from Hebrew Union College and is a clergyman, teacher, counselor, and also an award-winning author of 11 books on human values, civil rights, and spirituality. The book that we're going to be talking about today is The Blessing of Sorrow, again, How to Turn Grief into Healing. So with that said, we would like to welcome Rabbi Ben Kamen on to Inspired Living to share this hour with our inspired listeners and to help support those out there that could use it right now. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Welcome, Rabbi Ben.
Well, I'm just delighted. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just delighted and I'm very struck at, in a most positive way by the idea of inspired listeners and inspired hosts and guests. We all need to inspire each other, and particularly in the matter of grief and bereavement. So I really appreciate this opportunity to be with you and to talk with you about this book and about this issue.
Yes. And before we go on, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to find you and also how to find your book as well. What's the best way for them to find you?
Well, it was just published, and I think at this point, on either on Amazon.com, I'm listed there, and all my books are posted with them, including this most recent one. It just came out officially last week. Or I have a website, and any book of mine can be ordered directly from the website. We're featuring this one, of course, The Blessing of Sorrow, Turning Grief into Healing. And the website is www.BenKamen, one word, B as in boy, E-N, like in Nancy, K, A, M as in Michael, I-N, like in Nancy, .com, BenKamen.com.
Excellent. So when you talk about the blessing of sorrow, boy, I don't think many people initially think about sorrow as having blessings, but there are. Any situation that's difficult, there are blessings to be had. Now, I understand that you went through difficult loss of your own in your 20s that kind of puts you on the path that you're on and inspired the book that we're talking about today. You want to share a little bit with our listeners about your background?
Yes, thank you. Ironically, the first funeral I ever attended was that of my very young father, who died suddenly and tragically when he was 45. I was 23 years old, and I was already a student at the Hebrew Union College, the rabbinical seminary. The reason why I never had been to a funeral before is because our family is from Israel. I was born there, and my parents and my grandfathers. But I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So the only way we had access to the news of someone's passing or dying back home in Israel was when we got, they used to call them aerograms, these blue special all envelope type of papers that fold into a letter. And we'd hear, I mean, there really was very rarely international phone calling. But even if it was a phone call, I never went to any funerals because my family wasn't here. So I think that also was a kind of a baptism by fire, not only because it was the first funeral I ever attended, but because it was my father, who was so energetic and full of life, although he was complicated, but suddenly died of a massive coronary. And so the whole experience of grieving and bereavement and what it does to a family in both, in all categories, in all kinds of ways, hit me and my brother and sister, who are younger than me, and, of course, my mother, like a blitzkrieg. So it was a life-changing event, without any question.
Yes, and you know, in your situation, it sounds like it was definitely unexpected, so there was no time to prepare. But then you have the other scenarios where there may be illness and over the course of time, and there's all kinds of stresses that come with each type of scenario, right?
Absolutely, and you know, bridging from that a bit and agreeing with you, is that one of the things I stress in the blessing of sorrow is the fact that grieving and dying are all unique to the people suffering through either issue. And we sometimes, though we really are quite often well-intended, we make it more complicated because if we're visiting someone who's terminally ill, and or his or her family, we have a need in this American culture to talk. We're great talkers, we Americans. At the same time, we are a gossip culture, a sports culture, and a youth culture. And there's just very little reality stuff happening with the veracity of the fact that we are mortals. I'm totally generalizing, and my book features stories of people who, you know, I think did things in a way that was ultimately more healthy and led to healing. But we don't really think a lot about the reality that we are going to die. We our whole culture is oriented to make us young or look young, be young, energetic. There's sexual tension now in everything. And you have to be very vital for that. And we're not programmed. We're not wired. And I see it differently in other countries, including in Mexico. So nearby. And in many cases, we don't really have a lot of patience for older people, our elderly, who are, in fact, if they're, you know, even before any final illness begins to set in, they feel discarded. Not everyone is doing this. I want to be very clear on that. Enough of this pattern exists in America, and I've seen it as a clergyman and an author for 40 years. That it's a problem, and there is tremendous loneliness in that for a forgotten elder who has a physical or but also spiritual issues they need to see us. And we tend to dispense them to other people to take care of, you know, at a home or a hospital. Hospice is different. That's a whole different category. It's an angelic enterprise. And we can talk more about that if you'd like. So that's my issue. You're not prepared for death, but you don't really think about it.
Yes.
And you are in denial about it. And we're in that kind of a culture.
Yes, you know, I want to just comment on something that you just said. Very important how we discard the elderly. And it's interesting because my mom was a caretaker for a while. She just did it because she enjoyed it from her heart. And she would oftentimes share stories where the children don't come around. They don't check on their parents, and their parents are elderly, and they don't have anyone except for the caretakers that come in to help support them. And it is a part of our culture, even for, you know, our loved ones that, let's just say, have illness, like, let's say, Alzheimer's or something. They go into a home, and that's where they stay without a lot of encouragement, comfort, love ongoingly from families. They're forgotten about. So yes, I hear exactly what it is you're saying. I can understand that from my own experience through
and
the
I
stories
hear,
that my mom
I hear,
shared.
I hear your mom's pain in that as well, because so much of death and dying is sanitized. Even the way the dead are presented, I'm not against any of this stuff, but it exacerbates the kind of party atmosphere that attends many memorial services in the name of so-called celebration of life. I don't object to the phrase, but I'm concerned that we're only celebrating and we're not plunging into the grief, letting it help us to grow from it with wisdom that's bittersweet, and the pain itself. We can grow from this and be better informed. And grief is a great teacher when it sends us back to serve the living. So we're up against all that in this culture.
I like that.
And in just one moment, hold that thought there. We're going to be going to a 2-minute break, and we'll be back and continue on with our conversation, the very important one of sorrow and turning grief into healing. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Are you seeking answers to life questions? Would you like to connect to a departed loved one? Are you suffering from pain, stress, or anxiety? Kimberly Thalkin is a tested, certified, and professional psychic, spiritual medium, energy healer, hypnotherapist, and the founder of Love First, where life transformations happen. Love First services support, guide, and empower individuals by connecting them to their highest potential to live a healthier, joyful, and meaningful life that's filled with purpose. All services can be done by phone, Skype, or in person in Encino, California. Please visit lovefirst.info. That's LOVEFIRST.info for more information.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
And welcome back to Inspired Living Radio with Mark and Kim. Today we are welcoming our very special guest, Rabbi Ben Kamen, talking about his new book, The Blessing of Sorrow, How to Turn Grief into Sorrow. And right before the break, you had said a really important sentence. I was curious if you would want to repeat that for our Inspired listeners about how we can learn from the grieving process and kind of dive into the grieving, because a lot of us, myself included, when I was going through the grieving process, didn't want to acknowledge the grieving process. But if we could pick up right where we left off on the front side of the break, I thought that was a very important sentence that you said.
Yeah, what I had mentioned is naturally something I wrote in this book. Grief is a great teacher when it sends us back to serve the living. And that is part of the healing process in terms of grief. We are suffering when it happens, and we require help and intervention. We require people to listen. There's no need to have to say too much to someone who is either dying or grieving. They want to be heard. And we tend to, again, well-meaning, offer them platitudes, liturgical phrases from religions that we are part of, and that's all fine and good, but this is more than a religious event for a person. This is, existential. And I always find that it's the best thing to say is not to someone who's dying or grieving, "How are you today?" That's just not going to help out very much, because I've actually heard a couple of people in my career break out in anger. "How do you think I am today?" Mm-hmm. I mean, trying to tell them, "What are you, oblivious to this? This is not a regular conversation." So I'll sit down with people in either category, and I will say, I've been thinking a lot about you. And that's it. And most times, 8 out of 10 times, they hear that, and they just, I believe they feel safe. I believe they don't feel judged in any way by how they're grieving, because we shouldn't do that. And they just start talking. And the hard thing for us, who are the visitors, the listeners, is to realize we don't have to say anything in particular. We have to make them feel that they are being heard. The dying want to be heard. They because even though they're dying, mm-hmm. they're still living. And we sometimes exactly. unwittingly give them the impression that they're already out of the picture. And they don't want our pity. They have enough pity. They get that. So it's a delicate process here. And one way to be masterful at it is to do from the category of less is more. Just sit down with someone, eye level. If you're in a hospital, pull up a chair. In a house of mourning, of course, sit next to a person. And let them express themselves. You'll be amazed how much they have to say if the gate is open for them. When we ask them how they're doing, or we give them, banalities like, "I'm very sorry for your loss." There's no harm in that. But then that makes it kind of turns the conversation into a fossil. Just be real and say, I've been thinking a lot about you. And they will open up and they'll talk. And we don't have to ever really interrupt them. We shouldn't interrupt them. And they don't need our theological inspiration or guide at that point. Now, there are some people who would require that because they're very, very, very religious. I respect that completely.
Sure.
But I like to serve people at their point of need. If they're secular, don't pretend that they're religious. Just be, open up to them with fewer words, an economy of words, and they will give you many, many of their words coming from deep, wounded places. And that's the righteous deed. In our community, we call it a mitzvah, a righteous deed, to let someone who is dying or the one who is grieving express himself or herself. And we clearly are listening. They need to see that, hear it, and get it.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So I want to read a little bit, talking about the book today. And you said, meanwhile, many people who, you know, just exactly what you're saying, that visit us during our bereavement, our grieving process, do mean well, and they try to say something, you know, like you said, sincerely felt. But at the end, it's ultimately a social gathering, especially here in America. We know, because we know so much about, you know, politics and sex and good wine and travel and the movies and, like you said, NFL football every Sunday. But we just don't know how to talk about death. And you'd made a reference to Epicurus. Am I saying that right? Epicurus?
Yeah, I think I have
in the 4th century BC.
Yeah,
which I think is very important, because I think that it's very relevant to today's topic and today's discussion. And he talked about from the 4th century BC that death does not concern us, because as long as we exist, death is not here. And, you know, we really do have a tendency to simply dismiss death for as long as possible, even though it's life's absolute equal, just like you're talking.
See, back in the 4th century, they were also dying. It's been with us since the first person. It's like what is this? I didn't plan on this. We're pretty, not all people, but a lot of people are doing well in America, or they aspire to do well. And it's hard for them to sometimes move from valuables to values. There's no amount of money that you can give to someone who's grieving or dying that's going to have any effect on them. But we have to give them our spiritual currency. And that comes with walking in and not being judgmental of any kind. A lot of people grieve differently. Some people just not experience the grieving, or they're not particularly active in any faith tradition. Our job, clergy, therapists, but most of all visitors, is to let them be themselves. And you don't walk in, like in some Jewish situations, I've heard people come in and say to basically a secular Jewish family, wait a minute, you don't have your windows covered, which is a rare practice done by more fundamentalist Jews, and was more typical when we were particularly powerful, or in numbers, I should say, in Europe. But what does that what does it matter if their windows are covered? For the love of God, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is, somebody is dead. That's bigger than any old theological proclamation. Be pragmatic, be caring. That is godliness. When you allow the other person who's suffering to express himself or herself, not me coming in and telling them, boy, I can't be with you because you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you didn't prepare a meal. I encourage people who are grieving to assert themselves. If you're tired when you're grieving, because so many folks have come by, and you just can't take any more of the talking, or you're just tired, your responsibility is to yourself. Get up and excuse yourself, obviously, politely, with gratitude, but go upstairs to bed. I mean, you're not hosting anybody. You got plenty of a burden of a host on your heart from what's going on. So I have some issues. I don't ever interrupt something that's going on and criticize people. That's kind of productive as well. But we just got to, you know, death itself is not a religious event. It's a biological event. It's the outcome of mortality. It tends to respond better to heartfelt messages that are not too wordy and are not in any way pronouncements for or in favor of any religion. Except when a family has been, and the deceased was, very religious. And you know that. And it's obvious. So then we, people in my position who officiate and help people who are grieving, then we need to respond accordingly. But you can't go in. There is no one formula. Just like there's no one person anywhere on the planet who's like anybody else. That's all unique. So people die as they live. If they were cranky people, they get crankier when they're sick. If they were good-natured people, they tend to remain good-natured, and sometimes they comfort us when we come to visit them. You meet a lot of fascinating people. Death is a chance to visit with somebody, or grief is, I should say. Grief is a chance to visit with somebody exactly when they're leaving. So keep the communication lines real, open, listen more than talk, and you'll retain a good feeling about that, and you'll communicate however that means with them and visit with them without any sense of having hurt them or made a mistake or anything like that. I mean, this is what we aspire to. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was just thinking of the old adage when, you know, death comes to us all. And, you know, the only guarantee in life is death and taxes, right? The two things that are guaranteed to us. And you know, just as you were speaking, you know, it triggered a memory for me because I had lost, unfortunately, both my brothers and one to murder and one to brain cancer. So the grieving and the trauma associated with that was a lot for my family to take. But, you know, the one thing I remember that really stands out, like you said, just showing up, listening, not having a lot of words to say. And we had a lot of outpouring of people that would make us meals. And so, you know, when you're in the grieving process, especially after a murder, you just don't know what to do. You don't know how to function. And I just – the one thing I remember is folks bringing us casseroles and desserts. And we had food that lasted us for, oh, my gosh, probably 2 weeks. Somebody would just show up and say, hey, I'm just thinking about you. Here's a homemade pie. But when you were talking, that's what I really remember. I don't remember a lot of the words, but I remember a lot of the actions of people bringing us stuff, blankets, movie passes just to help us, you know, get out of the house and food. And I just, you know, that really kind of just triggered a memory. And it's right in line with what you're saying about something, you know, just showing up for that person. You don't have to say a lot and just listen. That's why we have two ears and one mouth, right?
Yes. That report you just shared, that narrative, really resonates with me. And it comes down to pretty much as you said, it's not what we say to them, because they're never going to remember that anyway. Now I'm talking about the grieving.
Yeah.
You know, after a death in a house of mourning. It's just offering kindnesses. And if you come over and you want to visit somebody, you come over and you bring some nice salad or something easy to eat and consume. Don't bring sizzling steaks, for example. But that's what you people will recall that and be really grateful to you. You didn't bring them any burdens. You brought them blessings.
Right.
Big difference.
And you're exactly right, because I don't remember exactly – I don't remember the words that were said, because it was just almost like – it's almost like the Peanuts cartoon where you hear the adults talking and they're kind of mumbled. That's what it was like for me during the grieving process. But I do remember the actions. I do remember the kindness. And I do remember the strangers of people that came out of the woodwork to support us as a family, to support me, that I hadn't seen in years and hadn't talked to them. And then out of the blue, they just showed up to support us. That was a really amazing experience.
Well,
that grieving.
Sounds like a very cathartic and healing. Death brings us a lot of information about this life. And it is it's a deep responsibility to be a visitor. Anyone who visits is to be praised for it. But it's more than just coming in. It's acceding to the situation. It's bigger than any of us. And nobody has the right formula, to necessarily open up the process of grieving. May I just add something else? I want to make sure. Okay, great. I have in the front matter of the book, or the very first page, there is, you may have seen it, the Ten Commandments of Grief. And it really covers all the major talking points in this book. But the key, two key things that I want to offer to you and to our audience today, and that is that a lot of the responsibility on how to heal from death is upon us who suffered the death. People coming in to support us, people coming in to bring us good food, movie pass. I love that. That's great stuff. It's substantive. It's real. Because time is a problem for people. They should step out and go see a movie if they're inclined to, you know. But for us as the actual people who are suffering in grief and bereavement, it's critically important that we try and make a major pushback on all these American tendencies to celebrate, to obviate, to go out and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on, you know, fashion caskets and all this kind of stuff. And I write about that too in the book, and about funeral directors, whom I work with very carefully and very, very, wonderfully for most time. But one has to, it's painful, but you cannot defer your sorrow. You have to grieve openly, directly, and immediately. And how you grieve is basically a product of your own soul, subconscious, your family narrative, even your health history. I once, and it's described in the book, I once did defer my sorrow and pretend like something didn't happen. This was not a death. This was the end of a relationship, of a marriage. And that's, you know, grief is grief. Losing a job is grief. There's so many categories of it. And certainly the end of a relationship that was meaningful and long evokes grief. Well, I just acted like, well, I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, I'm going to go out and party with my friends. And 4 months later, I fell into a significantly serious clinical depression and was treated by clinicians to get out of it. And they made it clear it's because I hadn't engaged the grief immediately. Grief is there to actually help us. It's a process of opening up the heart and the soul and memories. It can open our heart if only we let it. Now, this isn't easy. This isn't, and sometimes it's not pretty. But I tell you, I learned my lessons. You know, I've had subsequent losses of different kinds, and I have. Mm-hmm. I do lean into the. You can't get around it. This is like if you have a physical cancer issue, you just can't pretend it's not there and not get treated for it and possibly extracted, hopefully, please God. But it's our mental health is at risk sometimes in death.
Yeah. Let's hold that thought right there. We're going to be back here in 2 minutes. But it's right in line with what you're saying. Life is the acronym of learn it from experience. And instead of running from grieving, we should embrace it. And when we come back from our break, let's talk about some of the crucial elements of grieving well. As we talk about today's topic, the blessing of sorrow, with our very special guest, Rabbi Ben Kamen. Stick around. We'll be back in 2 minutes here on Inspire.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Have you wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
One planet, 7.3 billion people, only one you. Life offers us many opportunities and learning experiences. Are you ready to explore and discover this beautiful planet, the life and energy all around us, the spiritual world, and what is unseen, along with your own personal soul adventure? Mark Lanehart, the intuitive prospector, is the spiritual connection you have been prospecting for. Internationally known as a tested and professional clairvoyant medium and spiritual advisor, Mark's work as a metaphysical teacher, medical instructor, radio show host, inspirational writer, and hiking guide are here to help you on a journey of self-discovery, healing, inspiration, education, and a whole lot of spiritual awesomeness. Dare to dream. Dare to explore. Dare to live. For more information on Mark's spiritual practice in Seattle, Washington, please visit marklanehart.com or internet search The Intuitive Prospector.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. Sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
And welcome back to Inspired Living with Mark and Kim and our very special guest today, Rabbi Ben Kamen, as we talk about the important topic of sorrow and how to turn grief into healing. So before we went to went into break, we talked a lot about how people do a good job of kind of avoiding dealing with grief and then kind of the consequences that might come from that, as you yourself experienced in some of your own life experiences. So what are the best ways, how can people move through grief most effectively?
That's a great question. And I think it actually starts, it begins prior to any pending death situation. It's just a general. You need to include the reality of death in your daily life, just like you live in the reality of life. I don't mean to be morbid. I don't mean anything like that. But a lot of people just fear death, and that's perfectly understandable and normal. So if you fear death, it actually is therapeutic to be exposed to it. Not every day, not every week, but you know, if there's a funeral that you're invited to, or you might really feel you should be there, you should go. You should experience it. You're surrounded by all the other people in the setting, in the chapel or even graveside, whatever it may be, who are also going through the same thing. And there's a lot of interesting and very edifying conversation that goes on among people. You know, sometimes I'll perform funerals, 200 people are there from every economic status in this country and from every walk of life. And I look out at the crowd and I said, my God, they're all the same. Yeah, I mean, in a positive sense. So people who are poor, for example, are mixing in with well-off people, and their conversations tend to, first of all, demarginalize them from each other. And we all, even without a pending crisis, we all do become intrigued and are sometimes driven to share other people's thoughts about death and dying and so forth. Get to the hospital more often, visit the sick. This is all good. It's all good for them, obviously, but it's good for your soul. You can't really, people are in one sense, they're blameless because if you never saw anything that involves sickness, death, a funeral, then you're not going to really have any connection to it when you hear about it, or you'll come to the morning. House of mourning, as we've emphasized already, and not really, it's like an out-of-body experience. What do I do? What do I say? You don't have to feel that way. You know what to say when somebody is born. This is the flip side of the same coin. I mean, you know, and people who are afraid of death, I tell them, why do you fear death? Although it's understandable, you're going back to the same place you were before you were born. And don't you think of that as a safe place and a good place? I don't know if that's brilliant or not, but it struck up a number of different good conversations. So you have to prepare for death and make it part of your package. Don't make it a burden or extra luggage. But the more we fear death, the more opportunities we should take to be around it. In my case, you know, I've been very lucky in terms of the experiential relationship with death. I've been around it so much and in such very pronounced ways that it's cured me of my fear of death. It's a long time ago, you know. This is not the only way. Learn about death. Learn about how to really help people. I ask people whose lives are quiet and normal, thank goodness, to try and volunteer. Well, volunteering in general is a wonderful thing. But I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I am a volunteer hospice visitor here in San Diego. I'm out once a week visiting certain patients. the education, well, first of all, the comfort you give them by just listening, but being around them, it grows your heart and strengthens your loins. It really does. And that's the reason why I'm really appreciative. The first question I think from Mark about, no, at least from you, Kim. You know, what was the first funeral I saw? Well, my father's. It was circumstantial. I was 23. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what the hell was going on. My emotions were so stunned that I couldn't experience them.
Mm-hmm.
And it ultimately wasn't a healthy process for me. It took other ways and other experiences. Because like anybody else, I've lost many other people and had other kinds of losses. So get to know death, and then you'll not be oblivious to it or simply afraid. And I do understand that. And I have compassion for people who are afraid of it. It's nothing to really, you know, anticipate with, doing a couple of flips and clapping and whatnot. But it can be so therapeutic when you bring it into your life appropriately for years before you have to even deal with it.
Yeah, you know, you make a very good point, and that's certainly not one thing we're good at doing, is facing mm-hmm. our fears like that mm-hmm. On our own without being pushed into it in the way that you're suggesting. But I can see the real benefits that would bring. And also, like when you talk about, you know, visit the ill at the hospital or volunteer, everybody actually benefits from that, don't they?
Everybody wins.
You must, your life must feel very fulfilled with the hospice work that you do. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah.
Well, I do it independently of my, you know, professional work as a rabbi and author. I just do it because I am semi-retired, and I have more time in my hands than I had before this period of my life. And I also don't like sitting around the house, and it's not that healthy to always keep writing because you've got to pick up your rear end and move, do some walking and exercising. But mm-hmm. that's why I do several volunteer things, but the primary one is the hospice visitation. I see patients, you know, I have not known them before. Like I've known a lot of people, but not all, whom I've had the sacred privilege of officiating at their funeral. They're just people. And I do see the same two, three people going forward for the time being for, you know, several weeks. Basically, the clock is until they die. I try very hard to be there at the moment of death. We try to get the family in there because I want them to feel safe. Mm. And I want them to cry out. I want them to pound their fists. I want them to yell at God if they have. One of God's most unusual functions is to be the party that receives all the yelling and screaming and the blaming. It won't hurt God. God is fine. But it's very important for us to have that outlet. So I can have my hands, literally and spiritually, if you will, around this family, and also tell them, okay, this is what you do next. That's one reason I wrote this book. This book is more pragmatic than theological. Hmm. Your loved one died. What do I do? I get all these calls all my career. People will call me up. You know, somebody will call. I remember, you know, a young woman called me, Rabbi Ben, my father just died. What do we do? Well, nobody knows because the whole death culture is from without the general culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then my job is there not to judge them, but to help them. This is what you do, and this is who you call, and I'll be there if I can right away. I want to emphasize something else. In working with a number of mortuaries so many years, I decided to take a course that they offer, the consortium that's located here in Southern California and around the nation. I took a course just because I wanted to do it in pre-planning. I actually got a little badge upon graduation day with my name, and I'm a certified pre-planner. Well, I don't do that really. I mean, that's not, I'm interested in the pastoral nature and I, you know, that kind of a thing. But in taking this course, I learned so much about what people go through when someone dies and what they have to put up with in terms of bureaucracy, the bureaucracy of the hospital, the sometimes less than professional behavior of funeral directors. Most of them are really good, and they work hard, and they deal with very difficult situations at any hour of the day or night. But, you know, at the end, it's a business. It needs to be there, because what do we do if we don't have someone? Any way we retire someone who's gone, by cremation or obviously a burial, or whatever we choose to do. But you have to pre-plan it. And you, meaning you yourself, me, you know, because especially people who have children and, you know, and then maybe later grandchildren, we know we're going to die. We can do a great thing, and it's very therapeutic, people, to actually sit down, fill out forms, have discussions with your family when you're still healthy and all that, or before a tragically sudden death. So when the day comes, they do know what to do because their loved one left them instructions. You have no idea how much pain this relieves and avoids. So I'm not speaking as a member of the, you know, generally of as a colleague of mortuary directors, but it's just a really smart thing to do. By the way, it saves thousands of dollars also, because if you haven't pre-planned your funeral or had people help you do it, they come at you when it happens at their premium prices, and you're very vulnerable. You sometimes don't know what kind of casket you want or what he would want, the deceased or she. And it just, it removes huge tension from the whole thing. So that's also something that we can do, which helps us to engage in the reality that we are going to die someday. And people die at all ages, by the way. I mean, God forbid, children certainly die. But, and I don't think a child needs to be planned a funeral, but I think we should. And when I encounter those situations, there's so much more healing that starts immediately, because all the business and the agony of what were you, and then people start to argue with each other. I understand this too. No, that's not what mom would have wanted. No, this is what mom would have wanted. Well, if mom had just written down what she wanted, there'd be no argument. So that's important. So do not remove yourself from the culture of death in any way you can, but not in a way that interferes with your ability to enjoy life. But there's an education to be garnered from life experiences, including particularly bereavement.
Well, you definitely raised some very good points, just having experienced it in my own family, how people can respond, you know, family members respond to each other in a time like this, you know, over assets and what they want done, you know, what, all that kind of stuff, if it's not already laid out, and people, you're trying to deal with a lot, processing your own emotions, what's happened, and then all the other stuff that you're talking about. Certainly, you know, if you plan beforehand, like you suggest, it can just help create greater ease around what's already a difficult situation. How do you suggest, there's sometimes people get really stuck in the passing of a loved one. They stay there for a while. They don't know how to move forward.
Well, what the first thing to know is that I suggest two things. One is, a lot of people are aware of, though many haven't read, any of the manifestations of the five stages of grief originally devised by Dr. Cooper Ross. People get stuck because they don't realize, this is not their fault in the slightest, that it's five stages, but they're not necessarily in the order you see them on the page. It's not a progressive thing. It's point three you have on one day, and then point four you're angry, and then on the next day you're bargaining with God for a deal, and all these kinds of things. So it's good to become familiar with those as a general guide. I think it's very important to see a clinician when someone is gone, because they have a lot to offer, as long as you find someone with whom you have good chemistry. I'm not against anybody going to talk to their priest or rabbi or pastor. That's all fine and good. But I do say, and I will state it very clearly on this program, let religion guide you through the death process, but not direct you. Mm. It's a wonderful thing, faith. Faith, let it guide you, but not direct you. And this is, I don't have any pee with religion, but it's hard to understand for some people, and I understand this too. Death is not a theological experience. It's a personal experience. It's a product of our physical mortality. So I don't mean to cast aspersions on anybody. A therapist can help more than a rabbi sometimes.
And thank you so much for joining us today. That is the conclusion of our show, and by very fast, because what we're talking about is very important. But we appreciate all of your wisdom and knowledge and sharing with us. And certainly, if our listeners would like to learn more, they know how to reach you. Thank you so much. Until next week.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'm delighted to have joined you. Yes. And I appreciate your very good questions.
Beautiful.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your service. We really do appreciate it. I always like
thank
to say
you.
Life is the adventure. Death is just the analysis of the experience, right?
That's it. Yeah.
All
Take
right.
care.